When he saw the crowds, he went up on a mountainside and sat down. The disciples came to him, and he began to teach them, saying,
Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted.
In Peanuts' cartoon, Lucy is in hot pursuit of Charlie Brown. I'll get you, Charlie Brown. I'll get you, she yells. I'll knock your block off. And then Charlie turns suddenly, and he holds up his arms in self-defense. Wait a minute, he says. Wait a minute. Hold everything. We can't carry on like this. We have no right to act this way. You know, the world is filled with problems. People hurting other people. People not understanding other people. Now, if we as children can't solve what are relatively minor problems, how can we ever expect to? And suddenly, he is silenced. When Lucy lets loose with a left hook, like my wife did this week, and knocks Charlie Brown for a loop. Of course, he raises up, and his head is spinning, and Sally walks up to investigate. And as she turns to walk away, Lucy tries to explain to Sally. And she said, Wait a minute, Sally, I had to hit him quick because he was beginning to make sense. When one preaches on the paradoxes found in the Beatitudes, one has to hit quick to make sense. As we continue to survey Christ's guide to happiness, we are at once again confronted with what we might term as a rather ridiculous teaching. Jesus seems to be saying, happy are the sad. Now, this is contrary to everything that we've been taught to believe. The whole structure of our life, the pleasure madness, the thrill seeking, and the money, the energy, the time, the enthusiasm expended in seeking amusement and entertainment are expressions of this world's desire to avoid exactly what Jesus is teaching, mourning, sadness. We will do anything to get away from feeling bad, feeling sad. I especially love Eugene Peterson's words from The Message, from which we can read these words of the Beatitude. You're blessed when you feel you've lost what is most dear to you. Only then can you be embraced by the one most dear to you. The path to a broken wholeness. The strongest Greek word for sorrow is used when Jesus says, Blessed are they that mourn. Now, this word means the sorrow that pierces a person's heart. Therefore, Christ is essentially saying something to the effect of congratulations to those of you who are not just mourning, but crazy with grief. I did a little word study, and I found out that our English word crazy comes from the French word écrasé. Now, you'll have to pardon my French, what little I know I learned from Pepe Le Pew. But it means broken and shattered. Broken and shattered. This is what Jesus is talking about. Blessed are they who are broken and shattered. You ever been broken and shattered? You ever been that far in your life? So this word crazy with grief conveys a kind of a deep mourning. A deep mourning where life is broken and shattered. It's certainly a perplexing choice of words, is it not? How could anyone ever be happy when they're broken and shattered? Well, I think first of all, Jesus is trying to teach us something. I think Jesus would have us see that there's a certain kind of sorrow that opens doors to deep emotions. And they open those doors to the deep emotion that the happy and go-lucky type of people never go through. And for this reason, Jesus pronounces blessing or happiness and joy, peace and comfort on those who mourn, because they will find a discovery that no one else will find. Perhaps we can better understand this in the experience of Father Damien, who went as a missionary to the lepers of Molokai. And in Charles Allen's best-selling book, God's Psychiatry, he tells that for 13 years, Father Damien shared their Gethsemane. For 13 years, he was their teacher, companion, and friend. For 13 years. And at last, the dreaded disease laid hold on him. At first, he wasn't aware of it, really, till one morning, he happened to spill some boiling water on his feet. And you can imagine that this must have caused him quite a bit of pain, wouldn't you? Well, it would have been better if it had, because it didn't cause him any pain. It would have been better, really, if he had felt that scalding heat. Because it was then that he became aware of his doom. He became aware that the disease of leprosy had laid hold on him, and he began to creep upon him from the unknown. Here was a man that was once alive and thriving, and suddenly this disease that eats away parts of your body took hold on him. How tragic, we say. Now, how right we are. But I say to you that there is a far sadder loss than that of physical feeling. That is the numbness that comes from the callousness of an uncaring and unforgiving heart. In one of his epistles, Paul uses a most startling and arresting phrase. He speaks of certain individuals as being past feeling. Past feeling. Socrates described a person's conscience as a wife from whom there is no divorce. Maybe we can't divorce our conscience, but we can certainly stifle it until it is silenced. In 1 Timothy 4, verse 2, Paul describes a certain group of people whose decadent lives make it appear as though their conscience has been seared with a hot iron. In other words, their spiritual censors have apathy. They are as incapable of sorrow, as completely invulnerable as the dead. Such loss of feeling indicates something far worse than the loss of nerve sensitivity. It's an indication that something inside of us has died. And this frightful tragedy is not confined to Paul's day, however. It has its victims among us today. Happy and the sad? Oh yes, Jesus would say. But I would say to you today that there's an apathy that is insidiously growing in our society. There's a scene in the movie Batman Begins that describes that, I think, this situation extremely well. But before I show this clip, allow me to kind of set the scene rather quickly. Bruce and Rachel have just left the courthouse where they have attended the parole hearing of the man who murdered Bruce's parents. And after the hearing, they also witness this man's murder that was ordered by the city's crime lord, Falcone. So let's watch this clip.
Making the hearing public. Falcone paid him off to get Jill out in the open.
Maybe I should be thanking them.
You don't mean much.
What if I do, Rachel? My parents deserve justice.
Well, you're not talking about justice. You're talking about revenge.
Well, sometimes they're the same.
No, they're never the same, Bruce. Justice is about harmony. Revenge is about you making yourself feel better. That's why we have an impartial system.
Oh, your system is broken.
Care about justice? Look beyond your own pain, Bruce. This city is rotting. They talk about the Depression as if it's history, and it's not. Things are worse than ever down here. Falcone floods our streets with crime and drugs, preying on the desperate, creating new Joe Chills every day. Now, Falcone may not have killed your parents, Bruce. He's destroying everything that they stood for. You want to thank him for that? Here you go. We all know where to find him. But as long as he keeps the bad people rich and the good people scared, no one will touch him. It's good people like your parents who will stand against injustice. They're gone. What chance does Gotham have when the good people do nothing?
What chance does Gotham have when the good people do nothing? You know, what chance does Hazel Green United Methodist Church have if the good people do nothing? What chance does our society have if we just do nothing? My friends, there is something far sadder than losing one's physical feeling. It's losing one's spiritual feeling. And I fear to a large degree we see that happening in our world today. Reminded of an old story about the old drunk. An old drunk that was picked up off the street by several mischievous friends. And they paid this drunk to sit up all night at a wake in a funeral home. In a viewing room with an open coffin in case, you know, some friends of the family wanted to stop by and pay their respects to the deceased. And, of course, unknown to this town drunk, he was being set up by these practical jokers. Because in the quietness of the early morning hours, the body in the coffin sat up and started screaming out loud. Well, this drunk just very calmly, slowly got up, went over to the coffin and pushed the body back down and said, "Now, if you're dead, lie down and act like it." You know, my friends, there comes a time when if we are alive, we got to sit up and act like it. There comes a time when if we are alive with the love of God, we've got to sit up and act like it. We got to stand up and act like it. We got to move out and act like it. But there's an apathy. It's rendering us powerless with death. Sorrow can soften our hearts and make us sensitive if we'll let it. But too much of us have just pushed it away until we can no longer feel. But sorrow also helps us to be supportive. You know, there's that often quoted verse that says, "In love service only broken hearts will do." Few things heal wounded spirits better than the balm of a supportive embrace. There was a little girl that lost a playmate in death. And one day, reported to her family that she had gone to comfort her sorrowing mother, wondering what in the world could a little girl do to help a grieving parent? The father asked, "Well, sweetheart, what did you say? "Oh, nothing. I just climbed up on her lap and cried." You know, sometimes that's all people want, is for us to be able to cry with them, to share their sorrow. You know, one thing about sorrow Sorrow never leaves us where it finds us. It can make us better or it can make us bitter. The choice is ours. Robert Schuller says that we can turn our sorrow into a servant. It's kind of hard to believe and understand, but it's true. Because you see, I've seen grief take such a hold upon a person that it can become like a demonic dictator. It can turn you into a cynical, doubting, resentful, self-pitying recluse if you let it. In another movie that I saw, something jumped out at me. And as I was preparing this sermon, I remembered this particular scene in the movie, The Interpreter. Agent Keller talks to Sylvia about any animosity that she might have toward Zawaney, the man that's responsible for the killing of her family with landmines. And he begins to say her family's name, but Sylvia stops him. And she carries on this conversation with him.
Rage. Of all the people that I've looked into since this thing started, the one with the darkest Zawaney history is you. It was his landmines that killed you.
Everyone who loses somebody wants revenge on someone, on God, if they can't find anyone else. But in Africa, in Matopo, the coup believed that the only way to end grief is to save a life. If someone is murdered, a year of mourning ends with a ritual that we call the drowning mantra. There's an all-night party beside a river. At dawn, the killer is put in a boat, he's taken out on the water, and he's dropped. He's bound so that he can't swim. The family of the dead then has to make a choice. They can let him drown, or they can swim out and save him. The coup believe that if the family lets the killer drown, they'll have justice but spend the rest of their lives in mourning. But if they save him, if they admit that life isn't always just, that very act can take away their sorrow. Vengeance is a lazy form of grief.
Vengeance is a lazy form of grief. You know, one thing about people who face tragedy, if they face it head on, they realize that their whole life takes on a whole new perspective. Their whole way of looking at things change. The value system is turned upside down. Some of the things they had previously thought precious don't seem to mean much anymore. Robert Schuller recalled once visiting a rather wealthy lady in her home after she had suffered a very deep personal tragedy. He doesn't say what it is. But he talks to this woman in her home, and he says the first thing that he noticed when he walked into her home was all the arts, the pictures, and all the many things she had in her house and how valuable they were. And they were sitting there in the place in which they were sitting, some very priceless items from the, I call them vases, but I think if they're really expensive, they're called vases. Is that right? Vases from the Ming Dynasty. But he said, you know, as he was talking to her, he was struck by something she said when she pointed to one of those vases. She said, there was a time when if this house is on fire, I would grab it first on the way out. But she said, now the first thing I'd take with me on the way out of this house, if it were on fire, would be my family pictures and photographs. know, I think those things were said after the Katrina tragedy as well. Once you face tragedy and sorrow, your value system changes. But sorrow also has a way of leading us to true and genuine comfort. People, I think, largely today are afraid to mourn. You know, I've seen in my ministry a tendency, believe it or not, where we want to put our emotions way out there, particularly when it comes to sorrow. We put up this exterior of wanting to be strong. And if we ever should begin to shed a tear, what do? We apologize. We even have a whole vocabulary for it, really. If we should begin to cry, we call it breaking down, don't we? Or if we begin to show some tears, we even say that we have what? Lost control. There's something that's within us today in our society that we're afraid of our emotions. God forbid that we should mourn. But in biblical times, what did they do? It was a public display, was it not? Where people put on sackcloth and they went in and found ashes and they would throw it upon their faces. It was a public thing. Mourning was a thing that was communal. Now we want to take it and we want to put it away. And we suffer greatly as a consequence for that. We've lost our ability to mourn. And therefore, we cannot really enjoy and know the true essence of this beatitude because we do not know what it's like to really mourn. I think we will never find true comfort until we have struggled with true sorrow, heartache and suffering. We cannot keep it at arm's length. And my friends, I believe with all my heart that there is such a thing as good grief. Grief is a person's response to loss. And if grief isn't permitted to do its work, then comfort and peace will never be experienced. That, my friends, is the path to broken wholeness. But wholeness is the same word as a Hebrew word called shalom. Shalom comes from the root verb shalom, meaning to be complete, to be full, to be whole. It signifies a completeness, a wholeness, health, peace, welfare, safety, soundness, tranquility, prosperity, perfectness, fullness, rest, harmony. And then the part that I really like in this definition is the absence of agitation or discord. That's what this word shalom means. If you go to Israel, if you're greeted by Hebrew, it will be shalom. And they are bidding you this kind of greeting. And when you leave, they will say shalom, that they leave you with this kind of greeting. Wholeness and fullness. Absence of agitation or discord. Psalm 126. 5 says that they that sow in tears shall reap in joy. The Stoic philosophers, I think, did us a great disservice by mistakenly advising us not to mourn, that self-control is the answer to sorrow. But until you know sorrow, you'll never know comfort. There's a beautiful poem written by Emily Dickinson that sums it up. She said, I walked a mile with pleasure. She chattered all the way, but left me none the wiser for all she had to say. I walked a mile with sorrow, and never a word said she, but oh, the things I learned from her when sorrow walked with me. Mourning opens our heart to receive the comfort and courage that only God can give us. So my friends, we come to this day looking at where we stand in terms of dealing with the lostness in our life and knowing the comfort and the peace that only God can give. There may be some of us here today who need to come home to mourn. Are there broken areas in your life? Are you living with grief without any relief? Perhaps you're caught in the grip of failure, sorrow, and pain. Jesus says, happy are those who are broken, for they will find wholeness. And Christ says, come to me, come unto me, all ye who are burdened and heavy laden, and I will give you rest. My friends, you can come to Him with your broken heart, and you can find comfort and courage. Thank you, O God, for even in the midst of all the rhythms of our life, where we do give and receive, where you come and you bless us, and then life can just roll us over. But Lord, we know that you'll always care for us. As we reach those depths of our soul, those dark valleys, may we find in our deep mourning great gladness. Through your Spirit. Amen. God bless.